It's Morning Edition on 90.1 WABE. Good to have you along. I'm Dennis O'Hare. Atlanta's new police chief just finished 3 months on the top job, but Erica Shields has been with the APD for 22 years. As everything from a patrol officer to deputy chief, she joins us now. Chief, welcome. Belated congratulations to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the bridge collapse. That's sort of the obvious beginning point. And by the way, congratulations to the officers involved in the first response. They're getting some pretty high praise as we speak from the president.
Rightly so.
How much of a stress, though, does all that traffic direction and enforcement put on your budget, your overtime? Do you even know yet?
We don't know yet. It'll hit us pretty good, the overtime piece. But I have to say that working with GDOT has been terrific. Things are going as smoothly as possible. So, I think working in law enforcement, all of us are just so grateful and amazed that there were no fatalities, that really that tends to be our focus. So 5-6 weeks of inconvenience it's okay, because we're not holding funerals.
Are you having to divert personnel, though, from enforcement in other places just to keep the traffic flowing around that area?
Not so much. We're pulling our traffic units, so though I would expect to see a reduction in traffic citations from our motormen, they're being tasked with much of the heavy lifting.
There are lots of those no-through traffic signs on some of the neighborhood streets in the area. How are you enforcing that, though?
Well, we're just trying to discourage folks from using it, or if they are going through, to be mindful of these are residential areas with children around.
So you can't say, though the sign says no through traffic, you can't say, oh, you're not going
through.
No,
we're not.
We're going to stop you.
That'll be counterproductive. We really want to just keep the main intersections clear of anyone what is referred to as blocking the box and keep those moving as best as possible. I know that the individuals who are in those communities would like us to be staked out there. I understand. But we only have the capacity to manage so much. And the reality of it is the traffic has to go somewhere.
So you're not put in the position, really, of having to decide who's using the street as a cut-through and who isn't?
No.
Do you think people will actually pay attention if they know that the no-through traffic sign in real life is pretty much just a suggestion?
I have no idea. I think I have no idea, and that'll be a personal decision for each driver. I think we're looking at the big picture, and that's keeping traffic moving as best we can, given the conditions. I think some people will be mindful of it and others won't.
But you mentioned blocking the box.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different kind of enforcement question. What can someone expect if they do that?
They will get a ticket.
Which would cost them about how much?
Yeah, I don't know what the going rate is. I'm sure someone out there has found out, though.
Even though we've only had this for a week or two now, are you seeing people become more mindful of the rules of the road, or are they just getting fed up and acting out more?
We haven't witnessed a market change in behavior. I know that our Zone 2 precinct, they're fielding a much larger volume of phone calls. But in terms of road rage or just overt hostile behavior, we're not seeing a marked increase in that area. So hopefully that will continue to be the case.
There have been a couple of days where there have been other accidents in other places, sometimes big ones, sometimes Georgia State Patrol responds, sometimes it's the local jurisdictions. How worried are you that we're just one additional accident away from complete gridlock?
It's a very real concern. When the I-285 trucker incident occurred, it was not good, but it was as good as it could be in light of the fact it was on the south side of the city.
There was a spill on the south side.
Right. I'm concerned not even just about the accident, like just when it rains, because our drivers never slow down. And it is. It is one accident away from it really being a nightmare. And it's avoidable, though. I mean, that's one of those things that you have to slow down.
Different subject. Earlier this month, a former APD business manager, Tracy Woodard, filed a whistleblower lawsuit, and she claimed that she was fired after she alerted you and then Chief George Turner to what she said was misdirection of federal grants and drug seizure funds. Just wanted to get your general response to that claim.
Well, it's I obviously am limited in what I can say, given that my understanding is that, as you said, the lawsuit's been filed, although I don't believe the city.
You're not named as a defendant, though. The city is,
and
although you are mentioned in the narrative.
I don't think the city's been served yet either. But allow me to say this. I have zero concerns that there was any level of impropriety on behalf of the police department or the mayor's office. The employee was terminated for job performance, and I'm going to leave it at that.
She says in her lawsuit that she was told that it was because her position was being eliminated. You just said it was because of job performance. Do you know whether she was told that it was because her position was being eliminated?
I do, but I really feel as though, allow me to say, the position was not eliminated, nor was she instructed to that, of that effect. There's someone in that position right now.
Yeah, and she claims in her lawsuit that she was replaced by someone who was involved in the activity that she said was suspicious.
I'm going to have to stop here because we're getting too much in the weeds into ongoing litigation.
But just to clarify what you said earlier, in response to her claim that funds were used to purchase vehicles that were for the personal use of the mayor and his family, you're saying that that did not happen?
That did not happen.
The other part of her claim is that funds were used, instead of for their intended purpose, for overtime pay.
So depending on where we receive the funds from, we are allowed to purchase patrol vehicles for use in our official capacity. So vehicles may have been purchased, but they're not purchased for the mayor's personal use. Funds are available to be used for overtime, for what we call target enforcement on violent crime. So some of the funds would have been used for enforcement purposes. So I think to really, this is ongoing litigation, but I am not, this lawsuit does not concern me.
And you're expecting the city to vigorously defend it?
I know that they will.
As you come in, what are the biggest priorities for you, and which are the policies that are maybe at the top of the list of things to change?
For me, the number one priority is to reduce violent crime. 2016 ended well. We were down 3%, down 27% since Mayor Reed took office. But we were also very aware that communities did not feel safe, and they really had no interest in hearing about numbers or data. And one of the reasons they didn't feel safe is because we had had a marked increase in homicides, unfortunately. So my priority and my number one task, and what I'm tasking the department to do, is we are going to target and we are going to reduce the level of violence that is occurring in this city.
And you told the city council at one point that the city had not had a homicide in 4 weeks when a teenager had been killed in Edgewood a few days before that, although it was not classified as a homicide. Do you have any regrets about saying that at the time?
No, because I believe that the viewing public is smarter than that. And that if we're talking about a homicide, they know exactly what I'm referring to. Homicide and murder are used interchangeably. It's our homicide unit. We don't have a murder unit. So I give viewers more credit than that, quite honestly. And what we had is the teenager you referred to was a felon killed by a citizen, an individual, unfortunately, with a long criminal history, and it caught up with him. And someone fought back and killed him. It doesn't make it okay, it doesn't make it better, but it does not qualify as a homicide/murder under UCR reporting guidelines, which are the FBI guidelines that we have to follow.
What would you say to somebody, though, who says, okay, understand your definition, but there was still violence involved?
Oh, yes.
And someone might say, well, you're using the definition perhaps to make the problem seem less serious or less widespread than it is.
No, not at all. Listen. We have to follow the standards put before us by the FBI. And by the same token, I have to account for shoplifting as a part of the crime rate in Atlanta. So you might say, well, you're trying to diminish the significance of this killing. By the same token, I have to eat and explain shoplifting from Walmart as a part of the crime rate in Atlanta. So you know what? We talk in the lingo of how our business operates, and that is that by the FBI standards, a homicide/murder is the unlawful killing of another. I'm in no way diminishing the significance of that killing or any less concerned about the violence in that area. Not at all. In fact, it totally ticked me off because that's an area we've had trouble with. I've been pounding away at trying to get the property managers, owners, to step it up. So, no, it's not okay. And these folks that are operating these businesses, these apartment complexes with complete disregard to the communities that they reside in, need to be held accountable. And I'm not backing off that. But I was asked a question, an innocent question about, it was an innocent exchange with city council, and by no means was I trying to, and I was just answering it without any thought that there was media in the room, not realizing that that was going to become the takeaway from the conversation. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you about the media.
We have had some homicides, I think, since.
We have,
and you
yes.
mentioned, I want to come back to your original thought that you want to cut down on violent crime. Mm-hmm. What can you do now that's not being done?
Oh, well, we've done it. I think we have made inroads. One of the first things that we did was we took our APEX unit, which is our tactical unit, our strongest tactical unit, but for SWAT that is very, very narrow in their scope. But APEX had a broad objective, and they just were kind of throughout the city, and we were tasking them with numerous things to accomplish. And we did a couple of things. We changed out personnel in the unit. We added people to the unit. We moved them so that they're directly responsive to the zone commanders, so they have the ability to call in for additional resources. But most significantly, we made their focus guns. You are to recover guns. You know, if you by chance get a traffic ticket, by chance get a bag of weed, fine, write the ticket. But that's not your focus. We're not here counting numbers. I don't want to see stats. I don't want to see data. I want you to see getting guns off the street. And I believe that is directly contributed to the fact that so far this year we're down 33% in homicides/murders. And our gun seizures are up. We got, 45 guns off the street last week. So, I mean, I believe it is working. I believe they're in the right spaces. But do we have a huge amount of work ahead of us? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you have any idea what the pool, if you will, of stolen guns is, or guns that are being run through Atlanta?
Not a very good idea, but in large part that's because a number of people do not report their weapons stolen. Either they just don't want to be bothered with it, they don't have the serial number. So that's what you find is many of the guns that you recover will not come back as stolen, but when you start tracing them, they clearly, the registered owner does not have the gun. So it is hard to benchmark.
Is there any way to improve that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think we, for instance, we can tell you exactly how many of the guns that we've recovered are reported as stolen, but if you're talking about the educational piece and encouraging people to report it, I think that that's definitely something that, you know, we could improve our outreach on. We could coordinate with the ATF on and do a better job of encouraging people as a responsible owner to report weapons when they're stolen. Absolutely.
You mentioned focusing on going after dangerous things like guns, mm-hmm. as opposed to, saying, writing a ticket for possession of marijuana. Mm-hmm. City Councilman Kwanzaa Hall has just proposed decriminalizing, if you will, or at least making enforcement less a priority for things like marijuana or gambling or a number of other quote-unquote lifestyle crimes, mm-hmm. if you will. Do you agree with that?
Councilman Hall has a couple of initiatives. There's the marijuana piece and there's the pre-arrest diversion piece. And so on the marijuana piece, I think we can agree to the extent of making less than an ounce a ticket, a fine, and not necessarily jail time. I think it's a mistake if you just want to step forward and say legalize marijuana. I think that is really not well thought out.
Clarkston, for instance, is talking about decriminalizing marijuana.
I don't know that I would benchmark Atlanta against Clarkston, because when you want to see the trickle effect, we should probably be looking at Denver. The other thing I would say is when I refer to legalization, by no means am I referring to for people that have a true medical need in any way, shape, or form. But when you're just talking that it is being used recreationally, I think it is a big mistake to think legalizing it is not going to bring with it a whole nother set of issues.
So you think it's a gateway drug?
Oh, I know it is. And I say that based off my time when I worked Vice, I was an assigned to Vice. I worked plainclothes investigations in Zone 3, Southwest Atlanta, back when it was Stewart Avenue. It was auto dealerships, strip clubs, and seedy motels. And we would do Vice details. And that detail provided me with the best research model I could ever have been provided without knowing that was what I was getting. Because what happened is I would encounter all of these prostitutes who came from complete different set of backgrounds. They were black, they were white, they were educated, they were not educated. They were so diverse. And you had a lot of young females who were brought up and they had everything, no reason to fail. And there they were out there prostituting themselves and using crack. And the one commonality between all of them was they started with marijuana. And by starting with marijuana, they were open to experimenting with other drugs. So at the time, I didn't recognize the thought process that I was forming. It wasn't until discussions came about legalizing marijuana some years ago that I really started to reflect on what I'd heard all the years previous. I don't think that there's any way you can argue it does not have the potential to be a gateway drug.
So to sum up your position on what Councilman Hall is talking about, are you saying, okay, reduce the penalties for simple possession?
Oh, absolutely. They don't need to go to jail, and they don't need to have a criminal record, and they don't need to be able to not get a job because of it. I mean, we can do so much better than that. And what has happened is we're ending up arresting disproportionately a large number of young African-American men, and they're getting a criminal record, and they can never move forward. And it's so, I mean, yeah, as law enforcement, we can do much better than that.
On the use of force,
mm-hmm.
The GBI is investigating the January 26th shooting death of DeAndre Phillips, who was killed in a confrontation with an Atlanta officer. Now, surveillance video appears to contradict the officer's account that he was in danger because at the time he was hanging out of DeAndre Phillips's car. Have you had a chance to check the story that the officer told versus the story that appears to be told by the surveillance video?
Well, first off, the comment about the officer hanging out of the car was attributed all along to the officer, and yet the officer at no point had given a statement that I'm aware of at that time. Our officers are instructed not to provide a statement for this very reason at the time of an incident. So I believe that was third person after going through several people, the version that went out. So I don't know if the officer said that night or if that was what the fallout was. I don't know. Have I had a chance to see his official statement that he has provided to the GBI? No, I have not. When I last checked in with them, the investigation was still active.
You've been at this a long time.
Mm-hmm.
In the department, have you run into any kind of pattern of some officers, and I want to be careful here, mm-hmm. some officers simply not telling the truth about what happens after it happens?
We employ 2,500 people, 2,000 officers. Do people lie? They lie in every industry. I'd be a fool to think that at some point along the way, some folks haven't lied.
Do you think that is a problem, though, in the use of force?
I think that by and large, no. I will tell you, when I worked internal affairs in 2006 or 2007, there were a couple of people. I mean, you get a number of complaints, but there were a couple of people that you knew that they were just never quite being truthful. And the difficulty was, at that time, body cameras weren't even in the discussion. And so it was your word against my word, and that's it. And it made it impossible to sustain the complaint.
Because we had an officer recently who faced criminal charges because of an incident in which a young man was killed on Monroe Drive. Does that say to you, okay, we really need to do some training here, again, without impugning the integrity of most officers?
I think that we're doing an enormous amount of training, and I think that each situation is different, but you can never train enough, especially in the area of de-escalation. We're very fortunate in that General Electric just spent about $100,000 to purchase for us a simulator, which allows for real-time interaction and decision-making on the part of the officers. And so it was interesting when that was being proposed, a number of the folks at the table discussing buying it were very excited because it was going to have all these features and be fast and quick. And for me, though, that wasn't the key. It wasn't about being able to draw quicker. It was about the simulator really emphasizes how can you de-escalate a situation. So you cannot do enough training.
How close are the district attorney's office and the GBI and your department to agreeing on a protocol about when to release videos of police-involved shootings? Because I know there's been a lot of negotiation among all of those parties.
It's interesting. So what we did about a year ago is the department made the decision that any officer-involved shootings where someone was struck would be investigated by the GBI so that we would have the findings would hold a level of credibility that we did not feel we would be afforded as the participating agency. What happens is the GBI finishes their investigation, or they don't even finish the investigation. The GBI gets to a point. What they want to do is they want to interview the involved officers and any witnesses. And at that point, for the most part, they're going to be ready to release the video. But it's the district attorney's decision because ultimately you don't want to compromise the prosecution. So I think that to think that we're going to be able to come to a timeline that's identifiable is not realistic because I don't think that you can put it in black and white, that every situation will be different. My concern is if there's a particularly volatile shoot incident that's created a lot of concern in the community, similar to what we recently had, I think it's really important to get that video out there as soon as possible, good or bad. I just think that transparency is so critical. But at the end of the day, it's my understanding, and I could be wrong, but my understanding is that it is the district attorney's decision, and I would have to respect that. I just hope that I hope that I don't find us in a place where we're disagreeing too strongly on a timeline.
And you're in a world also where the body camera video might not be the only one, or that surveillance video might not be the only one.
Absolutely.
Citizens are taking videos all the time, and those will be out there.
Absolutely. And I think those are the sort of instances where it's really critical, especially if the body camera video or the car video shows a different angle or can provide some insight to what led to the interaction. And that goes back to that every situation is going to be different. And it's my sincere hope that we don't have many of these situations, but that when they do arise, that we can all agree on getting the information out as quickly as possible.
But you're not saying, oh, we ought to have a timeline of within 7 days or whatever. You want to leave that to the district attorney?
I would defer to the district attorney on that.
The Citizen Review Board is another area where there's been a lot of back and forth over the cooperation, or some folks say lack of cooperation, between the department and the Citizen Review Board. Would you like to increase the communication there? Do you think it's good enough as it is?
I was having to deal with that firsthand when the board was designed and under the previous director, and it was an absolute nightmare. And so comparatively speaking, I think we're in a much better space. I think very highly of Director Reed, and I'm appreciative of the citizens who donate their time. I think that sometimes probably we could do a better job explaining ourselves and just talking to them and making it less formalized process. But, you know, I appreciate their function. And if there's a way that the department can help make their job easier and allow them to be more effective, to feel more effective, hey, I'm there. Well, I just need to hear it.
When it comes to activities where people in a particular locale might be affected and the rest of the city may not be, but for those folks, it's really important. How does the department prioritize it? And I'll give you a specific example, illegal dumping. You've got folks on the west side that have been particularly plagued by this. To them, it's really important. But when you're trying to go after stolen guns, when you're trying to cut down violent crime, how do you prioritize something where a neighborhood says, hey, this really matters to us?
Well, I mean, we're fortunate in that we have a large department. So it's not like I have 50 people and I don't have the ability to accommodate a lot of these requests. So for illegal dumping, we have a code enforcement unit that's, I think, does a terrific job. If anything hampers them, it's probably just that we had such the housing crash left so many vacant properties that it's just a rather large issue at the moment. But we have numerous specialized units and are capable of accommodating many demands. So I'm sure that when you're the person who has a particular issue, i.e., the people in the residential areas who are having traffic cutting through there now.
Sure, if that's happening in your neighborhood, whether it's traffic or dumping, it really matters to you.
It does matter, absolutely. And so I think the key is you have to listen and hear them and be respectful of their complaint and make it a priority. And I feel as though the department has the capacity to multitask and address a series of issues. I don't think anything has to go out there and be unheard. I think the greater problem that you're going to run into sometimes is there may not be the teeth, the court, the legislation to follow through on some of the stuff that you want to initialize.
Now, staffing levels in the department, as you know, have been an issue for years in terms of just adequate numbers. So do you think you have enough people to do the kind of multitasking that you're talking about?
I know we do. I know we do. And that's not to say that, we have vacancies. We need to hire more. Totally get it. But I also know that this department is comprised of really, really good people who care about this community. And when you tell them there's a problem and it needs addressing, they will get it done. And sure, would I like to see us get to capacity on hiring so that we can have more of the personal contact and relations with our citizens and do less in the way of reactive and have more just downtime where we can interact with the public? Of course. But if you're asking me, can we problem solve now and multifunction? Absolutely.
President Trump has said he'd cut off federal funds to sanctuary cities.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that any city has actually called itself that. Mayor Reed has used the term welcoming mm-hmm. city for Atlanta. So currently, if someone is brought in for whatever reason and is found to be here illegally, do you contact the federal immigration authorities now?
No. I mean, we're not picking up folks for that reason. So let me say this. We're not doing sweeps. If we have someone in a vehicle who doesn't have a license, we would take them to the jail. I guess the jail may or may not contact. I'm not sure what Fulton County's position is, but for us, our focus is violent crime, and it's very singular, and we want to get it addressed. And it's not just confined to the police department. It's also looking at the prosecutorial angle, the judges, the signature bond that repeat offenders are getting. I mean, our focus is very prescribed. But if we encounter someone and it turns out that they're on some federal pickup list, I don't know if Fulton County is reaching out to the immigration authorities or not.
And the reason you're mentioning Fulton County is because it is the Fulton County Jail where they end up, correct?
I would typically think so, yes.
What would you say to the feds, for instance, with Attorney General Sessions certainly talking about enforcing immigration and the president talking about it, if they said, look, we want you to contact us immediately if you find out somebody's here without proof of citizenship and you've picked them up for whatever reason?
I'm not going to defy the Attorney General of the United States or the President of the United States. And if that's what we're being tasked with doing, I'm sure that we would be obligated to obey the law. That being said, that has not been communicated directly to us. And our priority is violent crime. That is the issue for the city of Atlanta. And that's where we're expending our energies.
One more final one on that subject. Do you want Governor Deal to veto the revised version of the campus carry bill, which would allow holders of concealed weapons permits to bring their weapons into more places than they currently can on public college campuses?
Yes, I would hope that he would. I just think back to when I was in college and, you know, the amount of alcohol that flows there. I just don't see that there is an upside to this. And I think that it's reasonable if you have a concern about a particular campus, then get the police department, either the local jurisdiction, the college police department, get them involved, make them step up their game. But to I just think this has the potential to really not be good.
Well, here in Atlanta, with many college campuses, mm-hmm. we have seen incidents involving violent assaults on people, robberies, for instance, around the college campuses. What would you say to somebody who says, look, if someone feels, and they have a concealed carry permit, that they need to protect themselves and that's the way they feel most comfortable doing it, why shouldn't they be
able to? Well, I would think the first thing I'd tell them is get your data right. Because when we had the violence, it was about 5 years ago. It was off of Georgia Tech property. It was on the side streets, 2 a.m.
We've had some around the AU Center, too.
But again, off the campus.
Right.
Off the campus.
Sure, but if someone is going onto the campus, I mean, do they stop and check their weapon at the door?
I just don't think that the problem is significant enough that you can take on the potential downside that will come with authorizing it. And that, you know, it's not to say that there is not a component of the argument that isn't valid. It's to say it's a risk analysis. What is the downside that you're absorbing in trying to offset what has occurred on a few isolated incidents?
Atlanta Police Chief Erica Shields. Chief Shields, you've been very generous with your time. We really appreciate your coming in and spending this time with us.
No, this is great. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.